This is Game Time AM. Now, back to Brad Lee and Jeff Jones from St. Louis Game Time on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning, St. Louis. Love some organ music from Jeremy Boyer, our friend at Scott Trade Center, playing organ music for the Blues.
And the timing was great there because Sea Monster was rolling in the door right as the organ hit, so it was almost like he had his entrance
music. He had his entrance music as we watched through the sliding glass door of the studio here at 590 The Fan, KFNS St. Louis. As Andy said in the open, we are Game Time AM. I'm Brad. That is Jeff, the phone's ringing. That's a good sign. Trevor, our guest from the Page 5, is here in studio. Matt Davis is answering the phone. And we're getting ready to join Blues president Chris Zimmerman. Now, let's just set the expectation here for the conversation. So Chris is Blues president. So that means the business side of the operation is his responsibility. So we're not going to like ask him, so what do you think about the game last night?
We're not going to be holding him accountable for ice time.
No. So we're talking, the first thing we'd like to talk about, and let's welcome Chris to the conversation. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
So the first thing that we wanted to talk about this morning while we have you cornered here on the phone is talking about the upgrade program for Scott Trade Center. So obviously it's been a topic of conversation for a while. It was an interesting experience, I would say, from my viewpoint, with the city of St. Louis. How would you describe the process that it took to get funding through the city of St. Louis? How would you describe the process?
Well, it was certainly it was a challenging process, but you know, I think one of the things that I've come to learn over the last 2 years as I've worked on this is, you know, our team, our building, and quite honestly, everything else that goes on in St. Louis and the region, they're all connected. And, you know, any type of project like this is really about, you know, how does an area look at the places it's going to invest, and how do you use scarce resources, which is kind of, you know, the world that most businesses live in. And so, yeah, the process is difficult at times, and hey, it's not an easy thing for a city to make commitments to these types of projects.
During the process, when there were meetings, committee meetings, and then when it came before the full board of aldermen, it seemed like you were the opening act every time before they got to talking about spending money to build a soccer stadium. And personally, I kind of thought that was, you know, a bad coincidental timing for you guys that issue came up at the exact same time. And you know, honestly, spending scarce resources is a difficult conversation. And I just thought it was bad luck that every time that you guys came up on the agenda, soccer stadium came up right after that. Did you guys feel that it was bad timing? I mean, you had to do things. If you wanted things to get done this off season, that was your timetable, right?
Well, yes, it was critical that we'd be on the agenda now. But, you know, one of the things that's happened is we started at first really working on the financing part of this back in July of 2015. It was were the first conversations we started to have, and as we built our case and built our understanding, that was right when the football stadium was on the table and being debated. So we obviously knew that timing wasn't going to be a good fit. So then you get to January of last year, of 2016, and the decision is made by the NFL that they're going to L.A. And so now the city is completely, devastated after all of that work, after all of those battles, after the dollars that were invested just to that point in the program. And so we decided that we would go focus on Jefferson City first because there was so much baggage around the NFL.
Yeah, Chris, I wanted to. I wanted to jump in right there real quick because I had a question for you. You have Chris Immerman here on 590 The Fan KFNS in St. Louis, 105.7 HC2 at InsideSTL.com. I wanted to jump in there because you mentioned the Rams leaving in January of 2016. From a business perspective, how did you sort of forecast the way that sort of opening in the market would affect the team? And do you think that is have you seen the levels of changes that you expected with the Rams leaving? How did it affect your end of the operation?
Well, first of all, it's pretty tough to project. And I would tell you the biggest thing is that the majority of our business, both our sponsorship customers, as well as a pretty significant percentage of our season ticket holders are actually crossed over with the Rams. It was actually about 30% of our season ticket holder base are also Rams fans. Now, a lot of those accounts are corporate accounts, and it's the same thing on the sponsorship side. So we didn't forecast a major windfall, certainly, from that. And I think do we have new business within a year that we had close to 2,000 new accounts? Some of those certainly were former Rams accounts, but quite honestly, much, much more of it. Actually, the majority of it were people who wanted to have the opportunity to have access to Winter Classic tickets.
Absolutely. So, Chris Zimmerman, you're telling us a little bit about the process. You went to the state first and then with the city and the timing-wise. But it made it through. So let's maybe talk a little bit about what's on the agenda for Scott Trade Center, what's on the schedule for upgrades. So you made it through the committee and then Board of Aldermen. So you have some financing in place with the city. What can fans expect either to hear about because it's behind the scenes, or what will they be able to see in the coming months at Scott Trade Center with upgrades?
Yeah, so this first summer, if you will, because we will do the work over what is likely to be 2 to 3 summers. So I would hope that by the summer of 2019, certainly I'm positive that all of the work that we will be able to fund with the city money will be completed by then. This summer, we're going to start on some of the things that quite honestly, have always been part of the request from the SEC. Next March, our big, in addition to the Missouri Valley Conference, we'll be hosting the 2018 Men's SEC Basketball Tournament as well. And they were a catalyst for a lot of this. So some of the things include redoing all of the locker rooms. It will include a new center-hung video board, which will be move us from the second smallest of any of the major arenas in the NHL to, probably the top 6 or 7. We will have new lighting throughout the building, sports lighting, which I think is one of the things, small things that people will absolutely notice a significant difference if you've gone into any of the arenas that have that. We'll have new sound system. We will be one of the things behind the walls, which is a major project, relates to the ice system, which we will be replacing the original ice system, which requires digging up the entire floor and is one of the key things that we need to get done during that window when the building is closed.
Yeah, Chris, one of the things I wanted to ask you about that I didn't hear you mention there, there have been renderings of the project that have shown what appears to be some sort of, you could call it a beer garden, you could call it kind of a retail situation, a complex there on the Clark Street side. I know that the bill, as approved by the alderman in the phase one portion of that, included about $9 million for something that was labeled New Clark Street Entrance. Is that included in that first phase, that sort of expansion?
No,
it's not.
We won't be doing that. That'll be next summer.
Okay, so that'll be next summer, but it is included then in the wave that was passed by the alderman.
Yeah, I mean some of the final. So as you said, it's a rendering, and directionally that is one of the elements where the front of the building will have a significant change to how it's set up, which will affect entry, will create a new beer garden, which would be public gathering space, not ticketed, a place for people to gather pre and post game.
Hey Chris, question about your projections for these projects. How long do you believe that these upgrades will keep Scott Trade Center competitive?
Fair question. My sense is for the next 20 years, certainly, and I think that some of the systems and some of the things we'll put in time will move on and people's tastes will change, but I believe for over the 20 to 30 year period, which I believe will be the life of the building, these things, assuming we continue to maintain them and update them as needed, they will continue to keep us competitive. I mean, we've got we've got new buildings coming online in Detroit, obviously in Las Vegas. You've got Edmonton. You'll have Calgary. So there will be a number of new buildings that will come on. But our belief is that by the time that all of this work is done, our building will largely feel like a new building. And I can't say that every square foot of that building will look and feel different, but I would say 85 to 90% of it will.
Chris, you mentioned all the new buildings that are coming online around the league. How much direct inspiration is drawn from those? I mean, from your perspective, from a business perspective, you're not on the road traveling with the team as often. From a sort of architectural and business perspective, how much have you done traveling around the league, and how much of that inspiration have you seen drawn from these newer facilities?
A lot. So we do go out, and I've been up to Edmonton. I've been to Vegas. I haven't been to Quebec City yet. But we get out to many of the new buildings. We're constantly talking about what's happening in other buildings. Obviously Levy, as a partner, is both involved in many of the existing buildings. They are working on the new football stadium in Atlanta. They work with they're working on the renovation at Notre Dame on their football stadium. They work on the new building in Sacramento. So whether it's on the food side, the general fan amenities or infrastructure, a lot of our work is done by going out and talking to other teams and arena management groups. One of the things we did was we just joined a group called Oakview Alliance, which is a group of 23 arenas which are coming together on a number of business as well as event issues. And so that's another resource. And finally, our architects, you know, are a firm that this is all they do is sports architecture. They were lead architects on much of the renovation down at Tampa, which is a building that has many, many similarities to ours.
You're listening to Chris Zimmerman, Blues president. We have him maybe for just a couple more minutes. I know he's a busy guy and needs to get off the phone here to get his day started. I did want to ask you one more question about upgrades and then maybe one or two business questions if we can sneak them in. So now you're going to go to the state to talk about funding for other phases of renovations. Governor Greitens, our new governor here in Missouri, has said the no money for stadiums. I don't know if that was new stadiums or big stadiums or if that covers upgrades. I was just kind of curious how you guys are approaching this next phase where you're talking to the state.
Yeah, so, I mean, our approach to this all along has been that this isn't about a hockey team. It's not about a single sport facility, that we are a city asset, a publicly owned, that we are a key driver for the hospitality, tourism industry, that we create significant jobs, and in the case of the state, that we have meaningful infrastructure needs, that if the state invests in the building, we will be more competitive, we will drive more tax revenue, and it's a good investment for the state. So we believe that's a clear and simple investment business decision for them. And I don't pretend that will be any easier than the city situation. Obviously, having already had some success at the city, it's easy to say that this will be tougher. So we have our work cut out for us. We spent a lot of time last spring without going to a vote, telling our story, and it is about an investment story for the state, and that's how we'll continue to approach that.
I was just going to sneak in one final question. So, you know, the Blues, with the win last night in Colorado, are now eighth seed if the playoffs start today, so they would be in the playoffs. I was just kind of curious. Fans throw around a number, you know, about $1 million per home game for making the playoffs. I was wondering if you could maybe give us a little insight. From your point of view, the business side of the Blues, how important is it to make the playoffs, and what kind of impact does that do for your organization's bottom line?
Well, if we look at the history of the Blues financially, which I know you and all and many of your listeners know has been a big challenge. You know, the Blues have been in the playoffs, I believe the number's 40 times in the history of the team. And so obviously the playoffs by themselves are not the factor for whether or not the Blues can be successful or not. The good news is that, you know, the economics of our team have continued to improve over the last decade. And particularly since Tom Stillman and his group have taken over. And so we're not dependent. We're not making any decisions around players or personnel on whether or not we make the playoffs. You know, our focus is on getting to the promised land and getting to a cup. And, you know, lots of things, and maybe we can talk another time about the broader sense of the economics of the Blues. But, you know, there's no one item that makes or breaks our year. You know, we have to be filling the building. We have to be maximizing our sponsorship opportunities. The NHL situation has improved significantly, quite honestly, for the Blues over time with the last CBA. So, you know, all of those things go into the financials of the Blues. And in the end, you know, our job is to drive towards, you know, winning a Stanley Cup, having the resources for the hockey team that we can do that, and then also making sure that we're providing the best product in the building and, you know, making the experience as good for hockey fans, for concert guests, all of those elements come together, and we'll be in a good position.
Terrific. Chris, thank you for joining us so early here on your Monday morning. It's still dark outside, so we appreciate your time, and we will take you up on that opportunity maybe at the end of the season or if the Blues are in the playoffs, and we could talk a little bit more about the economic side. So we appreciate you joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Chris.
All right,
Chris.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. That was Chris Zimmerman, Blues president, runs the business side. I think we got a few minutes to kind of react to some of the things he talked about. I know Trevor, and so you know, here's something that I think is interesting. So Trevor is not a proponent of using public money to upgrade the facility. And, you know, I didn't think this, you know, after the city has already come through with financing for the Blues and they're now moving on to the state, that maybe that discussion has we've gotten past that discussion. But I think we could still talk about...
Here's why we haven't gotten past the discussion.
Okay.
Because we need to talk about it for the next time. Well, that's why I asked. Why I asked how long the upgrades will keep Scott Trade competitive.
I did
because
think,
there will be a next time.
Well,
and
I did
when
think
that
it
next
was,
time comes, we need to have a much longer and more effective conversation about using public funds for arenas and stadiums.
I did think it was interesting when he said that these upgrades could keep Scott Trade competitive for
the
events,
rest of its lifetime.
Well, events like the SEC basketball tournament and concerts and shows and whatever for 20 years. And then he said that could be the entire lifespan of the stadium.
Yeah,
and
I think the length of the conversation about public financing is obviously engineered to be as short as possible because then you create urgency and panic around the possibility of losing a team, and it becomes easier to create pressure on whatever legislative body you need to pressure to get the money that you want.
But if you look at the approach the Blues took, and I you know, here's the bottom line for me. According to the Blues numbers that were given to the city, and the city did not dispute them, and there are a number of people running for mayor of St. Louis right now, and if they could have found any holes in the numbers, they would have stood on top of their desk in the chamber and waved paper around and said, the Blues are lying. Here's the true numbers. Here's the true impact of Scott Trade Center 365 days a year, not just the 41 Blues home games during the regular season, all that. The Blues say that there is direct spending related to events at Scott Trade year-round that is $140 million of spending in the city of St. Louis, and that they generate more than $100 million over the life of the building so far just in direct sales tax from the building. And that doesn't include economic activity that would happen that happens in the city. And I know Trevor and I have disagreed on this, and I'll let you chime in here. The bottom line is I go to a number of hockey games a year. I go to some concerts. I go to other things at Scott Trade Center. If the events weren't there, if the games weren't there, sure, I would spend my entertainment dollars some other way in the local economy. But the bottom line is I would not spend them in the city of St. Louis. I live in St. Charles County. It takes some effort to make it to something in downtown St. Louis. And if there isn't something drawing me there, I'm going to spend that money in Chesterfield or O'Fallon or St. Charles or St. Peter's. I'm not going to spend it inside the city of St. Louis. And I think that is the driving force in, okay, you have this publicly owned building. It generates all this economic activity. If the building isn't relevant, the activity isn't there, and the city of St. Louis would suffer. Trevor, what do you think?
All fair points. And I have been a critic in the past, and so I'm doing my best to lay my biases aside and be as objective as possible. But I want to read a couple sentences from a recent paper published by the Economic Studies Department at Brookings Institute. This was published by Geyer, Drucker, and Gold. In a paper called Taxes-Exempt Municipal Bonds and the Financing of Professional Sports Stadiums.
Wow. We talk about that all the time here on the radio show, by the way.
Academic studies consistently find no discernible positive relationship between sports facility construction and local economic development income growth, or job creation.
And my response to that is...
Indeed, after 20 years of academic research on the topic, articles published in peer-reviewed economics journals contain almost no evidence that professional sports franchises and facilities have a measurable economic impact on the economy. Few fields of empirical economic research offer virtual unanimity of findings.
Okay, two responses. One, we're not talking about building a new stadium. And, you know, the cost of building
not
a new
yet.
Stadium...
We will eventually be talking
eventually,
about
eventually, in 20 years maybe. So we're not talking about the overwhelming cost of building a new stadium. And the Blues, if you look at the cost of construction, and it was a public-private partnership in the time, in the mid-90s when Scott Trade was built, when it was Kiel Center, there was, you know, there was a lot of private money involved, there was public money involved. And it was a partnership. And I think it's worked when you look at the sales tax that's been generated and the economic spending. And here's the other thing. Because the way the city of St. Louis is organized, that it's not part of St. Louis County, and that the tax coffers for the city and the county as a region are split up, and that you have to have people inside the city limits for the city of St. Louis to benefit, and that it wouldn't just be if it was in St. Louis County, a much larger area with a lot more activity. Because of that situation, if the city wants to generate revenue and have that economic activity inside the city of St. Louis, that has to be taken into account, because it doesn't, if I'm spending $100 to go to a hockey game, and if there's no hockey game, I spend it on going to dinner and a movie, it's not going to be in the city of St. Louis.
Yeah, there's two texts here I want to read. One from the 314 says that St. Louis should be exempt from that study because of the situational divide between the city and the county. And then another from KG in O-Town, which says, I live within the city limits and I would not come downtown if it wasn't for sports, concerts, and other entertainment. And I agree that when it comes to new construction, there's a totally fair conversation to be had about the city-county divide and about the way that public money should or should not be used. The thing that I cannot get past for right now is what Brad was talking about. We are not right now talking about new construction. The city has an obligation to maintain the building because it agreed to finance.
No, it does not.
There
is no stipulation in the lease. This question was posed to Mr. Zimmerman at a public hearing at City Hall.
Yes.
They asked specifically, is there anything in the lease that obligates us to maintain the building?
Yes, there
is no... His answer was a definitive no.
Right, there is no legal obligation for the city to maintain the building. However, I think there, to the extent that it matters, I think that there is some sort of, at least, duty obligation for the city to maintain public property that it uses for the benefit of its citizens. Whether or not that's revenue-generating property, the city has an obligation to maintain things, right? In the same way that the city is obligated to maintain and keep a park safe, the city is obligated to maintain and keep Scott Trade Center safe and generating revenue.
And that topic about a publicly owned building and upgrades is why the Rams left St. Louis. So when they negotiated the contract to move here from LA in 1995, they put in the stipulation that the dome stadium that they were building at the time had to be in the top third of all NFL facilities, and that it had to be upgraded continuously and meet a certain standard. The reason that it was put in wasn't to give them an out clause after 20 years to move back to LA. It was to make sure that a publicly owned building was kept relevant. And if you look at what's happening with the Pittsburgh Steelers right now, one of the most successful and popular teams in all of professional sports, they're having a disagreement with the public entity that owns Heinz Field, because there are some upgrades the city wants to do, or not the city, that the team wants to do. And they're an icon of Pittsburgh, and they're running into a brick wall because there's no contractual reason to do it.
Well, and look, I rent property in the city of St. Louis, and if my ceiling started to fall in and my pipe started to rust out, my landlord is obligated to make sure that the building is livable. And the Blues' landlord currently is the city of St. Louis. Yes, they do not actually pay rent.
Yeah.
And yes, there is a business relationship that allows them to make money, but they are leasing a property from the city.
I wrote about that for one issue of our game time paper that we sell outside of games. This tenant situation, this analogy that folks make about how their apartment complexes are maintained by the landlord, really doesn't apply, because as you mentioned, the Blues pay no rent and the city makes no money from the naming rights to the very building that it is supposed to own. If the city really, in practice, not just in theory, in practice, owned this building, they would be making money from the naming rights.
Yeah, but
right?
They do make money from the parking. The city treasurer's office owns the parking garage and owns all the surface parking around the stadium. And interestingly, the city treasurer's office is apparently a distinct financial entity from the city itself, which is a whole other kettle of fish.
They're the ones that kicked us out of the garage a couple years
but
ago.
But so the city treasurer's office does generate millions of dollars of revenue off of the property. Not True. From the naming rights, but they do from the parking rights, which the team sees none of.
And I will say this, that's how professional sports works right now, because the CVC never made any money from Edward Jones putting their name or Trans World Airlines on the dome roof. That all went to the Rams. And when they were talking about building a new football stadium downtown on the riverfront, and I think it was going to be a car.
It was Enterprise.
Enterprise, right. But it was National Car.
Yeah, it was the Enterprise company. It was
National Car Rental Stadium or something. The Peacock group that was trying to put the stadium deal together was going to try to use that money towards the overall bill of building the stadium, and the Rams' response was, no, that's our money.
Well, and here ultimately is the thing that rubs me raw. The city is cooperating with the Cardinals' attempts to monopolize six square blocks of downtown. They're giving the Cardinals every possible break in terms of Ballpark Village and the stadium. They're giving them every possible break in terms of tax abatement, in terms of, like, you saw the situation, for example, where Mike Shannon was not able to sell his property for a number of months because the Cardinals were enforcing draconian zoning laws that allowed the Cardinals to have veto power over what went into a building that was adjacent to Cardinals property. It is insane the degree to which the city is willing to bend over for the Cardinals, and I do not understand why the Blues have to scrape and beg for nickels.
And you know what? Until they renovated, the Dave Checkets group renovated the Opera House, now Peabody Opera House, used to be Kiel Opera House, the Blues were paying the highest ticket tax in the city of St. Louis, and that ticket tax was going to the city. And it wasn't going to anything else. The Cardinals got ticket tax to come back to help with Busch Stadium, building the current Busch Stadium. And I think the Rams even got a huge abatement on ticket tax
in
St. Louis.
And that renovation of Peabody has created significant benefit to the city.
Jeff, you asked why the Blues should have to beg and scrap for nickels. That's let's remember, the Blues are a private business.
Sure.
Run by businessmen with their own money.
Right.
When asking for public money, shouldn't they have to beg and scrap and present real, clear evidence that they're going to provide a public benefit? Just because the Cardinals don't,
well, and
doesn't mean the Blues shouldn't.
Yes, potentially, yes. If you were to treat those entities equally, then yes, make them both beg and plead for it. If you have set the precedent that the Cardinals don't have to, we can argue whether it's a good precedent. I tend to agree with you that it's not a good precedent that the city government will allow the Cardinals carte blanche essentially to operate however they damn well please.
It's a dangerous precedent.
Right. I agree that it's not a great precedent, but it is the precedent, and so I don't understand why it is applied selectively.
You're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS St. Louis, 590 AM, 105.7 HD2. Streaming live on InsideSCL.com. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. Trevor is down the way, and across the table is Matt Davis pushing the buttons. We gotta get to a couple other things, but I'm going to leave it at this. And maybe I'll just give everybody one last chance to chime in on reacting to Chris Zimmerman, Blues president, talking about finances and upgrades to Scott Trade Center. I do think it's interesting, the last thing he said, that there isn't a magic bullet for the Blues to make money. And, you know, I haven't seen anyone be able to refute the idea that last year, after they had 10 home playoff games, they made the third round, that it was the first time that a team at Scott Trade Center, I mean Savas Center, I mean Kiel Center, since they opened the building in January.
The TD Ameritrade Center.
Yeah, the TBD Center, we'll just call it that. Since that building opened in January of 1995, last season was the first time that a Blues team didn't lose money. And that the playoffs aren't the silver bullet, and it's not the Winter Classic or commercials or sponsorships or luxury box revenue. That, you know, it has to be that they need to be a successful team and they have to keep attendance up, and it's all that put together. I think that's an interesting thing, and I think we can have them on maybe in another couple of weeks, maybe close to the end of the season, where we can kind of get into, okay, they're only going to have three playoff games, or they're not going to have any playoff games. you know, what is the state of the finances for the St. Louis Blues? I think that's an interesting thing.
When he does come back, I may or may not be here, but one of the questions I wish I could have asked was, by how much will these upgrades, according to your internal projections, boost the valuation of the franchise? Because although they might not make money year over year, and we could have a whole separate conversation about that, they bought the team for what, $130 million?
That sounds
a couple
right
years
out.
Ago.
It's and they now, took out a bunch of debt, too.
It's now valued at $310 million in Forbes' latest projection. So they're going to make money when they sell it, and they're going to make a lot of money.
Here, Jeff, I'll let you chime in, but here's my point of view. And it goes back to what you're saying about, should a team, a for-profit business, get money from the city and begging for nickels and dimes? The Blues are a civic thing. Celebrating this 50 years, you know, it's not just, I'm not going to say it's the zoo. I'm not going to say it's the Science Center. But it's in that conversation as a thing that's ours. It was never a team anywhere else. It was an expansion team 50 years ago, but it's something that, you know, a lot of people identify with the city of St. Louis now. And you could argue that the ownership group, if you look at the businesses that are involved, you know, Enterprise, Worldwide Technology, any business that is born and raised here in St. Louis has an ownership stake really in the team. And I kind of think the way it's set up is it's more of a caretaker situation than a for-profit enterprise. Stan Kroenke is only in it for the money. He moved the Rams to L.A. to make his team double in value. And it was only about the value. He saw the economic opportunity, and he took it. And he didn't care about me or you or any other Rams fan in St. Louis. He didn't care. I'm not saying that the Blues care. Like, you know, they want to reach out and give me a hug because I'm a Blues fan. But I would say that the way the ownership group is set up, A, I don't think there's any other person in St. Louis or business or entity or anything like that that could step in and buy the team for $300 million. I'm fairly certain of that. And second, I don't think they're set up to do that. They could be long-term owners and maybe change out chairman at some point, but that the long-term owners, the way it's set up, this could be the way the Blues are owned for years and years, and the situation of selling them for a profit doesn't come to fruition.
Yeah, the valuation of the team, I think, is relevant insofar as it affects the kind of borrowing power maybe of the ownership group, right? Their ability to finance their ability to finance improvements, their ability to finance perhaps their half of a new facility in 20 years, et cetera. I agree with Brad that I think that this probably is a long-term ownership group, and I will say that I hope that it is, because I also agree with Brad that there is probably not anyone in St. Louis who would be willing or able to buy the team at their current valuation and then run them, right? Because if you're buying them at that valuation and the team is losing money, then you're looking at losing money year after year, then you're probably looking at a substantial financial burden. And so it would stand to reason to me that any team, any ownership group that would theoretically want to buy the team at their current valuation probably does not care to keep them in St. Louis. And that is the part that scares me.
Trevor, you can have the last word.
I think the most important thing is that we remain very skeptical of anyone who is asking for public money, who's reaching into the city's pockets. Even if indeed St. Louis is the one outlier because of the city-county divide, and that all these other studies that say public funding is bad business for stadiums, even if that's the case, we need to remain on guard, because if we don't, the business men who run the Blues will continue to improve their standing on the backs of the city. They'll continue to ask for money, and they'll ask eventually for a new arena. And when that happens, we need to have a long, hard look at cold, hard facts, and not just feelings and emotions about a franchise.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I can't disagree about that.
A business.
Skepticism is good. I'm still a newspaper reporter at heart, and I still want numbers and facts to back up statements. And, you know, the way that I'll just use this as an example. Over the weekend, there are some tweets from a certain guy in the White House, and he doesn't put any factual basis behind the allegations he makes, and he riles up the entire media in the country over that. And, you know, you got to remain skeptical. I totally understand that.
I, on the other hand, have no ethics at all. And yeah. I'm willing to just open up, like just pour the money in.
Just
I don't,
give them a blank
check. I don't care. I don't pay property taxes in St. Louis. I pay rent. I don't care.
Can we get a hot take buzzer for that? We'll ring the bell. Ring the bell. Go ahead. Ring the bell. All right. Matt's like there we go. Matt's like triple working right now. He's doing stuff on computer. He's answering the phone.
He's podcasting like the Dickens.
He's there. Getting our audio up on InsideSCL.com in case you missed the first hour or you missed the Chris Zimmerman interview, which I think was really...
It was.
That's like the high point of the journalism for the history of the show so far.
It was journalistic.
Yeah.
You are, by the way, listening to Game Time AM on 590 The Fan in St. Louis, 105.7 HD2 and InsideSTL.com. 855-282-8255 is the call-in, text-in. Cucky the Dwarf texting in, telling us we missed a big question in the Zimmerman interview. He wants to know how the diaper-changing station upgrades are coming along.
He is a big fan of the diaper-changing station. All right, so we go from the height of journalistic integrity, asking tough questions of Chris Zimmerman. To the opposite. It is now time for the Bad Blues Lounge Facebook post of the day. Push the button.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
That is the Blues Lounge on Facebook. So I've got one here to start off. We'll see how much time we have. We gotta, you know, we end a little bit earlier so the cast of thousands for TMA can come in and get set up. So let me read the first one. And we have a little Benny Hill music to accompany. I love that.
I think they call this pre-pro.
Ah, yeah. So we've got a bit. This is awesome. All right. So Steve on the Blues Lounge writes, "It's time for the fans to start letting the Blues know this is unacceptable. There is no accountability from the fans. Fans need to give these players tough love. No more. It's okay." What is this guy talking about? The Blues fans need to show the team tough love.
Does that mean you show up in your S&M gear?
Oh my god.
Like, what does tough love look like in the context of a hockey team?
I know it is not popular in the Blues Lounge to boo the St. Louis Blues. I think he's saying we need to come out and boo the Blues. Or maybe like during warm-ups, everyone turns their back. I don't know. Trevor, how do you show tough love to a hockey team?
My question is, when the players lose a game or when they play badly, does anyone think that they don't know they're playing poorly and are playing or like?
So Yuri Lehterä gets called in the coach's office.
Does he not know that he missed a wide open net or that he blew his defensive assignment? He's a professional. And to have made it to this level, you must have at least some level of pride. I mean, you have to at least care a little bit to be one of the 750 best hockey players in the world.
So you're saying that Jaden Schwartz realizes
he can't hit the
broadside in Nebraska right now?
And it probably keeps him up at night, and he's probably really upset with himself.
But we got to hold him accountable, Trevor.
It's pretty hard to hold him accountable if he won't show up in the locker room to interview.
Hot take! So, yeah, you know, here's the thing with the Blues Lounge. There are some just... unbelievable opinions about how you interact with the team and what the expectations are. Here's another one. This is from Michael. This was a couple days ago. Just a question. Don't get bent out of shape. So he's already saying, hey, this might be a hot take.
So you're saying it's controversial. You're going to get mad about this.
Yeah, you're going to be mad about this. Does anyone think that Vladdy might be a cancer in the locker room? That's a horrible take.
No one thinks that.
That was not me saying that. That was Matt Davis dropping. That's a horrible take. That is awesome.
We've got so much production going
on right now. No, no one thinks that. Trevor, do you think Vladimir Tarasenko is a cancer in the Blues locker room?
You got to love when people who have no knowledge whatsoever of a subject feel the urgency to deem themselves experts on it.
I think he was just commenting about you and I, Jeff.
Yeah, so the thing is... There are some of the Russian guys in the past have literally been a cancer in the locker room, right? Because Gusarov and Havanov are like lighting up darts in between periods and burning them down probably in the locker room. So in that case, you did see the Russian guys like literally being a cancer in the locker room.
But causing.
I have seen no evidence. I have seen no evidence of carcinogens flowing out of Tarasenko. So I think we're probably in the clear on that one.
And by the way, even if he were a quote unquote cancer in the locker room, he's your leading goal scorer.
Right, nobody
and
cares.
By far your best player. So why don't we all, the players, even if they don't like him, grow up and say, this guy helps us win. Yeah. He makes me a better hockey player.
If he's going to score 40 goals, he can have his own locker room for him and Jory, and I don't care.
So we'll just make the pitch again. If you're on Facebook and you're part of the Blues Lounge and you're tired of the hot takes and horribly misinformed posts, there is another Blues Lounge, the number one, #1 Blues Lounge, which is related to the TMA fan page, more than 5,000 people strong, who are all effectively banned from the Blues Lounge, by the way. So that's kind of how this that's how this fan page war started. So check us out on the number one Blues fan page, and you know, you could quit the Blues Lounge if you want. So, but we're gonna keep talking about bad posts from the Blues Lounge. We are banned there. We can't even see it to join and ask to join. Everyone that's a member of the fan page has been effectively been banned. More than 5,000 people cannot see the Blues Lounge, but we have Blues Lounge spies. So our friends that are on the inside, keep resisting, keep feeding us bad posts from the Blues Lounge.
I gotta tell you, that sounds worse out loud than it does in my head.
Why is that?
We have spies in the Blues Lounge.
How do you think I'm reading posts from the Blues Lounge? I can't see them.
I just wish I had more things to do.
Well, but don't don't be judgmental about our spies on the inside who have infiltrated, we're not going to name them because, you know, it's kind of like the leaks from the White House. We know the leaks from the Blues Lounge.
Right. Rogue Blues Lounge staff.
Yes. That is it exactly. All right. We got about 5 minutes left. Trevor, you had some stuff that you wanted to talk about, some other things with Doug Armstrong and his decisions. Can we maybe get to one or two more of those before we get to the three stars of the show today?
Yeah. So one trap I think general managers fall into is a sort of groupthink, right? Where none of them is really courageous enough to go too far outside the bounds of what's acceptable when building a roster. And all their opinions just sort of converge on what's generally accepted. And as an example, I would cite the fact that there are some really good, productive hockey players who could fill third and fourth line roles adequately for the Blues, who are available for bargain basement prices. Wouldn't have to, no $3.85 million for Patrick Berglund as your third line center. You could build a really good bottom six, but Doug Armstrong and other general managers in the league don't want to go that route because it's risky to fail if you do something outside the norm than if you fail doing something within the norm, and that jeopardizes his job.
I think, Jeff, you've touched on this when you've said that if you watch the Blues' strategy in trying to build a roster the last couple of years, they lose to speedy Minnesota, they try to get faster. They lose to big, oversized Los Angeles, they try to get bigger. Is that what
it is? Yeah. Well, and so the question I had for Trevor too is, you talk about general managers as a collective. There's one obvious outlier here, and that's John Chayka in Arizona. Yep. I mean, do you think that that's a guy who is bucking those trends? Is that somebody who is changing that method for himself, at least?
He hasn't been around long enough to really say, but yeah, I think he's going to run the Coyotes as they need to be run as a moneyball organization, and that's going to mean going outside and challenging accepted hockey philosophy.
Well, no one else is going out and getting Chris Pronger or Pavel Datsyuk right now and putting him on the roster.
And
so
you always forget Dave Boland.
But
poor
everybody,
Dave Boland.
Everybody forgets Dave Boland.
My ultimate point is that we should remember that Doug Armstrong's top priority is not necessarily for the Blues to win the Stanley Cup. It is something very similar and with a lot in common, but not quite the same. His number one priority is to keep his job.
And that leads me to a good question, because I made the point last week, and I'm going to stick by it. I'm going to go all in on this. I don't think Doug Armstrong makes the decisions he's making right now, selling on Shattenkirk, getting a pick in 2019 that is past his contract, and not doing anything else at the deadline, not trying to get picks and prospects, and really kind of standing pat with the rest of his players, prospects, picks, everything. That says to me that's not a guy managing to keep his job.
Right.
That's a guy with job security who's playing the long game, and his philosophy and strategy that he's had in place for years now, he's keeping it in place, and he's expecting to keep doing it for years beyond this, right?
I agree. I think that I don't know how long he will be the general manager. I think that it's reasonable to suggest that he moves into a sort of president of hockey operations role, and someone like Brodeur, McInnes becomes general manager in title, at least. But I think it certainly indicates that he has a long-term future with the organization.
Trevor, do you think that Doug Armstrong has some assurance that he's going to be the general manager beyond next year when his contract expires?
It's hard to say. I don't think he has any promises, because I don't think that...
Is he
why would he have given? Why would he have been given a promise?
Is he acting like he's managing for his job, that he's managing for a contract extension?
I think in order to maintain credibility to his boss, Tom mm-hmm. Stillman, he has to talk about the long term. I mean, I think it would be blatant if he were just managing for the immediate future. In order to make a reasonable sales pitch, he has to include the long term goal. But his actions, I don't think, and I guess we disagree here, I don't think support the fact that he's got the long term in mind, because he's paying money now to guys like Alexander Steen and Jay Bomeister, Laterra, that are going to be bad contracts down the line.
Agreed, but he hasn't gotten rid of any of them, and he's not being aggressive in trying to do anything. I mean,
well,
I think the number one thing that Blues fans, at least from my point of view, the number one thing that Blues fans are upset with is just a lack of action, of being proactive, other than the Shattenkirk thing, which was reactive because of the situation that Shattenkirk dictated.
A really good maxim to live your life by that applies here as well is to never ascribe to malice that which can be chalked up to incompetence.
Oh, man.
Maybe he's just bad at his job.
I wish we had like a philosophical hot take horn for that, because, I mean, that is deep, man. I got to tell you. We're having to wrap the show up so TMA Live can come on.
Very, very briefly, I wanted to hop on relating to TMA things. There is a poor gentleman from the 573 who texted in on
Mid-Missouri
on December 12th, and then on January 17th, and today on March 6th, badly wanting to become a member of the TMA fan page, and he just can't find it. So this poor guy for 3 months has been trying. So
TMA
space
fan space page.
It's on Facebook. Just search on Facebook TMA fan page.
Maybe he's been blocked.
That's possible. I can't vouch for the fact that you haven't been blocked, but I look, even if he's, I'll have to talk to him about this, because even if he's been blocked, this guy for 3 months has been texting in trying to find the poor fan page.
He's probably an admin for the Blues Lounge. All right, we need to wrap up the show. Three stars. I'm just going to take control of the three stars.
So, go for it.
So third star, we got to thank Trevor for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely.
This has been good. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for waking up at O'Dark 30 to make your way to St. Charles.
Thank you for having me.
Second star goes to Matt Davis for the production value of the Bad Blues Lounge post of the day. That was amazing. We'll be doing that again tomorrow and Wednesday and Thursday, because there are a lot of bad posts we need to get to. And number one star, Chris Zimmerman, Blues president. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. Trevor over there. Matt, this has been Game Time AM. Thanks for joining us. You can always podcast. Follow us on iTunes, on InsideSCL.com. This has been Game Time AM on 590 The Fan.